If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. This will be the last podcast dealing with the 2021 NFL season. It'll be prospects. Rich will come on. Corain will come on. We'll have Friedman will probably come on. We'll do all the bros. We'll get the RotoViz gang back together to tout our favorite, D3 FCS guys who run 4-2-40s. But we're here. Super Bowl, Bengals, Rams, Rich. Who you got? Have you bet the spread?
I have not, because I was waiting to see what it was going to do. And I even seen like if a couple books lowered the Rams to 3.5.
Caesars offered it at, and they said we're offering it at 3.5 for 24 hours, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting that it hasn't moved. Like I said, to me, the most appealing bet line wise is the under, but I just don't want to bet the under in the Super Bowl. Like, I don't want to watch the last football game and like root for nothing, and root for just nothing to happen. So I don't know if I'll get there. To bet the under. I'm looking at the Bengals, though, just because historically, the Bengals have been awesome against the spread as underdog all year. They're 8-3 against the spread as underdog. And then if you look at the Super Bowl history, underdogs that are getting more than a field goal but less than a touchdown, they've outright won 5 Super Bowls in a row, and they're 9-3 against the spread over the past 12. So I'm leaning towards maybe just taking the points and hoping it's a tight game instead of the under, but there are a lot more player prop stuff I like here on the board than necessarily the lines. Like I said, I don't want to bet the under, man. That's not fun.
No, literally, that's what I've been saying all week on TV is like, I think this game's probably going to be kind of bad. And I think there's probably going to be lots of field goals, lots of punts, lots of not going for it on fourth and
first
two.
Down runs.
Yeah, lots of first down runs. But literally, like, imagine being the fucking guy at the Super Bowl who's like rooting against points. Like, yeah. I can't do it.
So you want the game to suck? Like, I can't do that, man. Like,
yeah, like I don't want this to be Rams Patriots. I don't want this to be Broncos Panthers, which were some of the least enjoyable games ever. You know, I mean, like that, like the Rams Patriots Super Bowl was so bad. I remember two plays from the entire game. I remember the Gronk like 40 yarder to set up the field goal to put them ahead. And I remember Goff missing Cooks in the end zone because he was a second too late and McCourty got there. Those are the only plays I remember from that entire game.
I remember needing, I was the first in a tournament actually in a showdown slate. And I was winning like 10K and I needed the Patriots just to, not have a kneel down. I think they kicked a field goal. Vinatieri kicked a field goal.
Oh no.
It was 10-3 and Vinatieri kicked a field goal. A team at Vinatieri passed me.
Unbelievable.
Needed him to get a first down. I just needed a first down.
Yeah.
I had Edelman as a captain in that game. Like, he was the only dude that did anything. I think there was one touchdown and Sony scored it.
He's the last he's the last skill position player, I believe, of the last 15 years to win. There's been more linebackers and defensive players to win Super Bowl MVP than offensive skill position players in the last 15 years.
And the last two receivers that won it, or maybe it's two of the last three, actually won it without a touchdown. It was Deion Branch and him didn't even score a touchdown. They're the only two players to win Super Bowl MVP without a touchdown. And that just like almost is a testament to how bad that last game was. But, I mean, the other Patriots Super Bowl is fun. That was the TO game, and he would have won it if they would have won. Him playing in that broken stick, it's just a Super Bowl award, or it's a quarterback award. It just happens. Unless you get a weird defensive touchdown in a low scoring game, these quarterbacks are probably going to win it, whatever the winning side is.
See, I actually don't think so. I've been on this angle. Well, of course they are the odds on favorites, right? Like, I'm not disputing that. But my supposition has been that Joe Burrow and Matthew Stafford are not in the Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady grouping of mega superstars, where basically the people who are voting on this award, after the quarterback throws their first touchdown, they write the name of the quarterback on the piece of paper, and they're just ready to turn that in. I actually think of styles of Super Bowl, this is much more likely to produce a Cooper Kupp, a Ja'Marr Chase, a defensive player, which is, I mean, obviously not Aaron Donald, who, like, we just keep seeing tweets on how people are betting Aaron Donald to win Super Bowl MVP at like 15-1 or whatever horrible number it is. But I don't think Stafford and Burrow, I mean, honestly, in a weird way, I actually think Burrow is more that caliber because he is such a dominant part of the narrative about the team, whereas Stafford is a little bit less than, like, people are not ascribing a huge portion of the success to just Stafford. Kupp is actually kind of the bigger name. So I bet Kupp and Beckham at 6-1 and at 25-1 for Super Bowl MVP. Cause I think very similar to Edelman, you know, if Odell has 6 for 154 and 1 with like a, you know, a 60-yard touchdown or whatever, and Stafford has the Mahomes game when Mahomes won MVP, 2 touchdowns, 250 yards. Now, Damian Williams should have won Super Bowl MVP, but he's Mahomes. So Mahomes is always winning that award. But I actually think if that situation is duplicated with the Rams, I think it's less likely the quarterback gets it than on the average team.
And one thing, if you're going to bet these quarterback, non-quarterback MVP bets, look at like correlating and parlaying some of their like
with the win
stuff, yes. Right? Yeah. So if you like Cooper Kupp to win MVP, you know, you might want to pair that with like over receptions, maybe anytime touchdown. And then also maybe like with Cooper Kupp, if you're going to bet those, like you parlay that with like a Stafford interception, right? Like Stafford.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, like that's a great angle. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, cause you know, obviously that's like the path to get there. You know, he has a turnover, the line just maybe doesn't look as clean. Right. And Kupp has like 12 for, you know, 130 and he catches the one touchdown or two touchdowns they have. So like, correlating bets has been a real big part of my strategy this Super Bowl, especially writing up player props, like looking at specific lines. It's like, yeah, this over or under, like there's not a lot of value here, but when you pair like all this other stuff together, like you correlate these, you get a nice little ticket, you know, that you can cash out.
Well, I've always touted that, like that's because, you know, we do our Gilcast show where we do that. You know, I'm always like, look, you got to tell a story with your wagers. But mm-hmm. Now for, you know, a lot of our listeners are in, you know, they're in New York, they're in New Jersey, they have these legal sports books, and DraftKings and FanDuel have made it a big dominant part of their marketing strategy to do the same game parlay stuff, because yes, obviously it's super profitable for them in the end. You know, how often do they really get hit for a 100-1 ticket? I mean, like certainly like never, you know, but people love to chase. And so you can't, I mean, on these legal sports books, you could just log on and be like, all right, Cooper Kupp, MVP, Rams win, Stafford throws an interception, over 104 yards, Cooper Kupp anytime touchdown. Like you could parlay all those together and just have like a disgusting wager, which is, it is very interesting. And I really can't wait for legal sports betting to come to Missouri so I can donk off thousands of dollars on these.
Yeah, we are ours passed in Ohio, but it's not official yet. You know, it passed, but yeah, we can't lock in. So it's probably a good thing I can't. So I am looking at to get offshore here on a number of things like that. Like I said, if you like Cooper Kupp MVP pairing it with Stafford's, also if you like the Rams, right? Like you outright like are laying points at the Rams, that should signal that like, hey, you might want to bet like Samaje Perine's overs, right? Like you could do things like that. There's a lot of ways to get creative because, you know, obviously if the Rams are going to win and put them in negative game script, you know, Samaje Perine is the passing down back. If you look at it, Joe Mixon doesn't play passing downs, which is one of the most frustrating things. So if you're on the Rams, you might want to correlate that with some Samaje Perine overs. There's a lot of different angles here instead of just like the old, like 5 years ago, looking at player props and saying, yeah, I like those 2.5 receptions. I like that. There's a lot of ways to get fun with it. Cause like you said, everyone wants those screenshot life, that screenshot. I hit these five.
Yeah. So what are some of your biggest positions that you've taken thus far?
Well, I mean, on what, just like player props or
just in general for the game? Yeah. Like what are like, I mean, whatever, you know, player props.
I mean, it from just like a game top-down stance, like the more like I worked on the game and produced content around the game and, you know, tried to dig in and give great creative content for people that they haven't seen revolve around this game. Cause obviously you're inundated with just the conversation of one game. You know, everything I just saw on cover, like the Rams have just an edge basically everywhere. Maybe the defensive backs versus the wide receivers, like a size factor for the Bengals, is like the one like clear area where the Bengals have an advantage. But from an objective stance, the Rams just have all these advantages.
They have micro edges. They have all the micro edges.
Because you can't even take away McVay as not being an advantage.
Because Taylor's even more of a coward. McVay's gonna come out with all these first down runs and be punting on fourth and short, and Zach Taylor's gonna be like, "All right, I'll one up you. I'll punt from your side of the field. I'll punt from fourth and one on your 48. Like, I don't care." And I mean, it was so bad for them against the Chiefs. The Chiefs could not get a first down. Mahomes had a QBR of 1.4 in the second half and in overtime, and the Bengals still almost didn't come back because they were in second and nine, like every down. They were just perpetually on second and nine.
It was the screen interception. The screen pass interception was basically the play that like the Bengals had to have, and they got it. But you look at that Rams game versus the 49ers, McVay was on his way to one of like the most deplorable like coaching losses ever.
Yes.
Like on like a big stage. Dude, they were out of timeouts with 8 minutes to go in a game they were losing at the time. The amount of just mismanagement, the game mismanagement, the micro mismanagement. He challenged two of the worst plays I've ever seen challenged. it's just insane. The two challenges he had, they weren't even close plays. It was just like a guy that didn't watch any replays. He just immediately was like, "Oh, I'll throw it." And then got bailed out there at the end. But McVay's performance in the NFC Championship game was absolutely disgusting. They ran for 2.2 yards on first down, and 65% of the Rams plays in the NFC Championship game, 2/3 of their plays were run needing 7 or more yards for a first down, non-first down plays. It's like, what are we doing? It was all time, and they win the game. So obviously it doesn't, come to pass, and it doesn't get highlighted as much. Shanahan took more heat for just his one cowardice decision. He had a couple other ones too, but obviously the big one. But man, I mean, McVay, like you said, but like Taylor comes from the McVay tree. So like, we can't even discount the Rams for that. So it just, every time I dig in, the Rams just have an edge. I mean, the Bengals have been overcoming these situations all year, but like eventually, like you just don't get one. So I don't know. It's everything just points to the Rams though.
Which is interesting though, because it all points to the Rams. The line has not moved at all.
No,
it has not budged. And so I am assuming that outside of our bubble, outside of the bubble of all the nerds, I am assuming that there's got to be a lot of public money on the Bengals and on Joe Burrow, right? That's got to be the only reason that this is not 6, basically because.
Yeah, the under is the only thing that's really moved because it opened at 50.5 and it's dropped 2 full points. But.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about what is actually the biggest mismatch, which is just this Bengals offensive line is so bad. They gave up 9 sacks against the Titans, and the Rams have the most disruptive defensive line player of the last,
Jeffrey Simmons
years.
3 weeks ago looked like Reggie White against the Bengals. Aaron Donald is looming in the middle. Von Miller's playing out of his mind since he joined the Rams. That was a big thing when they traded for both Odell and Von. Like, it wasn't even them, like, when they traded for Ramsey, right? It was like, are they getting damaged goods here? Like what do we really have? Odell was hurt at the time. He had that shoulder injury. And then Von was hurt too. He didn't even play, I think, the first 2 or 3 weeks after the trade. He had the ankle injury and wasn't really playing well in Denver at the front half of the year. And then he's been awesome since they got him. I think he has 7 sacks in 11 games. He's been good in the playoffs too. So it's just like, yeah, they've got a lot of heat here. And then you look at this Bengals offensive line, and a lot of people are even talking about it from the passing game stance, right? Like, how can they pass protect? But they're not going to be able to run the ball at all in this game. Like, I don't know how long Zach Taylor will stick with it, because it's been Zach Taylor's MO to overstick.
But they're gonna try. That's the thing.
I mean, they are not gonna be able to run the football. The Rams are already 3rd in the NFL in yards before contact allowed to opposing running backs. I mean, they're gonna just devour this run game. So maybe we'll see the Bengals forced into just having to throw because they just aren't getting anything on the ground, but that really hasn't swayed Zach Taylor often a lot either.
No, it really has not. So have you taken any position on these sack props? Like those are, some of those are pretty interesting, like I think the line for Rams sacks is 3.5, but you know, obviously you could bet some of the alternate totals too.
Yeah, I haven't really dug in on them, like the team stuff yet. I was, you know, I did so much player content this week and player prop stuff that I didn't get so much into the weeds on the team stuff. But the Bengals can do a couple things here. They did against the Chiefs, and now Burrow, a lot of people think he only took one sack, like the Chiefs didn't get any pressure. Like Burrow was under pressure.
No, he just moved his ass. I mean, that, yeah. So you'll probably laugh at me for this one, but I took the squarest, most public line ever, which is the over on Joe Burrow's rushing yards. And I got the 10.5 number before it moved, but I mean, literally just basically the exact same thought, which is that this man is going to be under fire and I don't think they're going to win. So I don't think he's going to lose those kneel down rushing yards at the end. But I mean, basically 10.5 yards is like two scrambles. Like if he breaks the pocket twice and gets, you know, 8 yards one time, 4 yards another time, he's home free.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed those low lines where you just need a play or two to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my favorite stuff in the Super Bowl revolves around that. I mean, sure, it's fun to like, oh, I've got to cheer for 9 Cooper Kupp receptions or like 100 yards, but I'm like, Van Jefferson has hit his longest reception prop in 80% of his games. Like,
yeah.
Like, let me just get one Van Jefferson catch. Like, and there's nothing like that. I remember a couple years ago betting the Cordarrelle Patterson receptions in the Super Bowl, right? And I was like, there's nothing like just like living on like, give me just 2 Cordarrelle Patterson catches, baby. Love that stuff. But yeah, like Van, like there's some bad lines out there. I think like Van Jefferson's longest reception props, a really bad line. And you should take advantage of that. But I haven't really gotten onto the team stuff yet.
Okay, so what are some of the player props that you've wanted to hit the hardest? I'm curious if we agree on some of these.
Yeah, I mean, well, like I said, literally Van Jefferson, his longest reception prop, he's hit 80% of his games. And even over the stretch where he's only averaging 2 catches per game and only seeing 10% of the targets, he still hit that in 6 of his past 8 games. And the thing is just look at the types of routes he runs. He leads the team in vertical routes. So he's run 120 routes this season that are vertical, go routes, double move, or post routes. Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham combined have run 109 of those routes. So it's really just one reception, you know, kind of gets you there. So I'll live that life with Van. I think his yardage is another low line, even on this downstretch, because he hasn't been getting a lot of targets, but he's run them wind sprints, the Hogan wind sprints, but he's still hitting his receiving line too. So I like pairing those together. Not so much the receptions, but yardage and longest catch. I definitely like those. Are you on any Rams wide receivers props?
Odell, man. I think Odell is kind of the secret sauce here. You know, he his first game with them, or the second game with them, the first game he like barely played, but the second game he scored the long touchdown. He was huge for them in the 49ers game. You know, certainly I do think that not that the Bengals are going to shut Cooper Kupp down, but I think, like, you know, pretty clearly you got two weeks to plan for a game, like making sure Cooper Kupp doesn't get 200 yards, you know, in the first half or whatever is going to be a big part of their plan. And also I've just been buying on Odell this entire time. Like just the whole time I've been like, Odell is still good. Odell is still, you know, I mean, he's not like Giants Odell, but he's still a very good wide receiver. And, you know, he's priced underneath T in all these, you know, less receptions, less yards. And I just don't think that makes very much sense at all. And I'm on Chase's over Sue, because I'm very curious what you think about this. My gal brain theory is that it actually makes more sense to stick Ramsey on T and kind of wipe him out. Kind of like, you know, like what the Eagles used, or the Raiders used to do with Asamoah, where they would basically be like, this part of the field, you're just not throwing to this part of the field, and we'll deal with whatever happens there. Because Ramsey is going to lose against Chase one-on-one more often than he's going to lose against T, just because of the types of routes that Chase runs. T tends to kind of run deeper routes, you know, where, and T is used to being isolated anyways. And so I think they'll do the, you know, one-on-one with the safety over the top on Chase and kind of do the Ramsey thing on T, which is I think going to mean that maybe Chase isn't running, like ripping off, you know, 50 yard touchdowns, but more of like a 11 for 112 yards type game. Like he's just getting lots of short and intermediate stuff.
I mean, that's how I would approach it if I were the Rams. And the Rams right. play a ton of zones. So even when like Ramsey's on people, like it's not so much like the traditional, like everyone else across the board is playing man too. You know what I mean? It's like he's in his coverage, but like, you know, that's the thing we lose in the sauce with like cornerback wide receiver matchups. It's like this player is credited for giving up the reception, but was it really man coverage? Like, you know, stuff like that. And the Rams just play a ton of zone. They play zone the second most highest rate in the NFL. So even Ramsey's necessarily on him, it's not necessarily he's like just it's just him in a shadow situation. I actually think they'll just kind of just play their defense, right? Like he's moved to basically full-time boundary corner since the week 11 bye, instead of being like in that star role where he's been inside and outside. So he'll be on the boundary. I would, like you said, I would approach wanting to get him more like, because he's the only tall guy they have. I mean, Darius Williams, Dave Long, like all these guys are small defenders. And that's like the one edge the Bengals do have, is even Tyler Boyd is a bigger slot receiver.
Yeah. I like Boyd too. I'm on Boyd over receptions and over yards.
So like, yeah, Boyd, I think a lot of people are circling on this week as kind of being like the guy, the middle of the field stuff, especially with Uzoma being banged up. Because you know, Drew Sample has been basically a net negative anytime he's played over his career so far.
Yes.
So that's like a huge loss. I know Uzoma is saying he's going to dress. We just don't know how much, what that means, right? Like the dude is playing in an injury that he's not supposed to be playing with. So I don't know how much he'll actually play. So losing him was a big deal. So a lot of people are kind of correlating like the, where the Bengals are, the Rams struggle is a little bit of that middle of the field stuff. You want to attack their linebackers in coverage the most. So a lot of people are getting to Tyler Boyd and the ball coming out fast because of the line matchup we talked about in the trenches. So a lot of people are getting there on him. Chase has interesting lines though. Like they're like the stuff is set pretty high for him. I do like Higgins' odd stuff a little more, but the Bengals pass catcher stuff, I'm not really in love with any of it except for P. Ryan's, where he's at, just because of, you know, how he's utilized in game script. And like I said, if you're on the Rams, you should be on some of his overs, because of where he plays and where he's utilized. And they're so low. Again, we're talking like these lines, like 8.5 receiving yards, right?
Yep.
This could be one, that could be one play, that you get there. And you know, 1.5 catches, so 2 catches, like you're there. So those are things like if you want to correlate, if you're on the Rams side, like you know, if you believe the Rams have an advantage, like you want to look at.
Are you on any of the Blanton stuff with Hig? I mean, it's worked Friday morning. Higby still hasn't practiced.
Yeah, he's not gonna play. I haven't really seen a lot of solid lines from outside of like just like anytime touchdown stuff. I really haven't seen a lot, but I think he's a very, he's going to be obviously, I think, the most popular like showdown play, or like for sure.
Yes.
Because of where he's priced at, and the Bengals have struggled against tight ends. They've also struggled against tight ends detached from the formation, which is Blanton has been like basically used as that in the passing game. Like the thing with, we talk about the one edge, like where you say you do give McVay a lot more credit than Zach Taylor though, is like on the offensive side of the ball, like the Bengals have been a lot very star driven. Whereas you see, like even in the playoffs, like the Rams can create stuff for Kendall Bland. Whereas like when Uzoma leaves the game, they can't do anything with Drew Sample. Like Bengals can't. So you're getting a little piece of the pie, even though we can't get any Ben Skowronek receptions because he drops his touchdowns. You give McVay
let me,
a lot.
Let me
more
tell fans. You got to play the shit out of Ben Skowronek in showdown. Yeah. I mean, you got to play Skowronek. You got to play Hopkins. You got to play Daryl Henderson. You probably even have to toss in some Trent Taylor and Mike Thomas, because these are basically the two teams that use auxiliary players the least of any teams in the NFL. Like you could, you know, randomize 32 teams, random hat for a showdown slate. And I think I literally do think that these are the teams that use like a fourth wide receiver, a second tight end, the least of any team in the NFL. Like it's unbelievable. It's all the top two. It's really, I mean, even top two wide receivers, like the third wide receivers for these teams, are used way less even than the average team. We have P. Ryan for the Bengals, but even P. Ryan at 2,400 on DraftKings is going to get pretty chalky just because of you need someone who's going to be on the field. And then, Daryl Henderson is going to be activated for this game. Who knows? I mean, literally, who knows what happens, with him and Sony and Akers in this game?
Yeah, because we don't know, because, you know, Akers had the injury in the NFC Championship game, but he had also fumbled 2 times the week before. So were they going to reduce, like, him having 90% of the workload anyways? And now you add Daryl Henderson, it just muddies it up. I think it's hard to take like Akers overs in terms of his volume stuff, just because it's so much guesswork, right? Like you may want to just lean towards the under if you want, but I think there's some interesting things for Akers, like in terms of like his longest run prop, I think is very interesting. Because you look at the Bengals, like where they've particularly struggled to being a shaky run defense, they've been awful against 11 personnel runs, which is all these teams live in is 11 personnel, both these teams. Akers has 59 carries this year, and 47 of them are out of 11 personnel. So I think like Akers' longest run is like, if you want to attack any Akers props, if you want to go overs, that is, any of the volume stuff, I think is tough to play overs, because we just don't know, like, what's the workload going to be, right?
I'm on Akers unders. The combination of him shoulder injury, not looking that good, Henderson being activated. Like, I just think there's a lot of reason to think that Akers might play, you know, yep, 55% of the snaps here, and also just might not be that effective. Even if you still have the out, if he could have 21 carries for 48 yards, you know, that's pretty firmly in play.
Yeah. I mean, the four run defenses they faced since he's come back have been like among like the toughest in the league. Obviously the 49ers twice and the Bucks mixed in. This one's a little lighter, but you said it's just you have Sony Michel, you have Daryl Henderson, you have options. It's really tough to like get excited about his volume stuff going over on him, right? Like it's just really hard to get there.
Yeah. So that's the game, man. That is pretty much it. I gotta be honest. This is like the least excited I've been for a Super Bowl in a long time. I don't have any.
Well, the Chiefs played in the last two, so.
Yeah, correct. Correct. and the one before that, you know, rooting against Brady because he, devil magic D Ford to be offside before that. You know,
we did the show 2 weeks ago and basically talked about how it was set up for the Chiefs, and for 30 minutes of that game. I mean, I don't know how, if you've podcasted since then, but like we talked about, like, oh, the Chiefs, it worked out for them, and then they're up 21-3 and just cruising, and then to have this all just like fall apart, man,
it's really like Mahomes is basically going to get a pass for this for the most part because he's so great and his regular season numbers are so good, but it is truly a James Harden Houston Rockets 0-27 3-point, like it is a historical sports choke. Their win probability, yes, was like greater than 95% for huge. I mean, it is, and you know, Reed should also eat some of that too, and he won't. You know, it's not like Andy Reid's gonna have a job, Eric Bieniemy's gonna have a job. Like, I don't think they're gonna replace Spagnuolo, but like that organization should really take a long, hard look in the mirror because it was just bad. And honestly, they should also be learning lessons from when they were fucking up in the regular season too. And I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the off season is going to hold for them, but they got to get some, I do wonder if it's just like, you got to get some fresh blood in the building. You know, it's basically been the same guys on offense the entire time that Mahomes has been the quarterback, you know, really other than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but, and I guess McKinnon too, but McKinnon, you know, doesn't really factor in to this much at all, but like,
I did want some McKinnon Super Bowl stuff. It would have been great.
Yeah. Oh, come on, dude. McKinnon in the Super Bowl, the nerds would have had a field day with it. But it is extremely disappointing. And the Mahomes choke is like that. It's like the wool being pulled off your eyes. Like it's like you never want to meet your heroes. You know, like Mahomes choking in an AFC Conference Championship game is like so brutal, man. He was so bad, and yeah. I don't have any I don't have. I mean, you know, didn't seem like he was hurt. Didn't seem, no.
It was the same stuff that happened earlier in the year. Just, you know, not being patient, taking things. The crazy thing about the Chiefs, they just run the ball more. They probably win that game, but in the second half, but obviously the play before halftime, but the Bengals keep pulling this stuff out. So like I said, I mean, history has been on their side for like betting a Super Bowl that with a team like the Bengals, their odds in their favor. They've been so good against the spread. We've seen
they've been so fucking lucky. The Bengals have been so fucking lucky, sure, in the playoffs. I mean,
you get lucky to get here.
But have to be. What? That's the thing. Is like you literally can say that about.
Well, the Rams got lucky too. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. You know, Jaquaski Tart catches that interception. That game is booked. That game is completely over.
They could have lost to the Buccaneers with how shitty they played that second half too.
Well, that one would have been an unlucky loss.
No, because you kind of make your own luck in that scenario, and they basically started trying to run the clock out in the second quarter.
It was rough. That was the one. Was Brady going to do this again? And it ended up retiring. Brady ended up retiring after that. So
we'll see. What odds would I have to give you that Brady plays a game next year? What odds would you bet?
None. I don't think it's. I don't know. Like he'd have to be. I don't see any way he'd back out on it. But I don't know.
I think he maybe not next year. I don't know. It just feels so unbelievable
I was surprised.
The NFL could exist without him. I was super surprised.
I mean, even for him being his age, but I legitimately thought he might try to play to 50.
50.
And then otherwise, and the other thing too is like he was good. So like
he probably should have won MVP. I mean, if I was voting for MVP, I probably would have voted for him.
But maybe that's it too, is like he doesn't want to go out like the
Peyton.
Like a lot of those guys. I mean, Peyton got the Super Bowl, but you know, some of these guys that have really hit the
Breeze looked really bad at the end. Peyton looked really bad at the end. Ben looked like unbelievably bad at the end. And you're right. I mean, I don't think Brady wants people's lasting memory of him to be,
yes,
you know, a 30-point home playoff loss where he throws a pick six or whatever.
It also feels like too the last year of Brady was really such like a, and not that he needed it, but you could really tell like he was like big into like brand building this last year. Like he went hard like off field stuff, like right.
That's
like,
true. Yeah. Like more and, so and than he, I ever remember.
Yes. Like he got into NFT, did all the stuff. Like he started, never saw Brady in a bunch of commercials and shit. Like he would never done a Subway commercial.
Yeah. Like that's like, true. I hadn't really thought about that, but maybe so that like, was kind of the tea leaves.
Yeah, you could tell like from like a marketing stance, like he's just transitioning. It felt like he's transitioning too. But I was so surprised that he did actually retire. I thought he'd at least finish this contract at minimum and then see where it went. But the Bucks, we'll see what they do then, how they recalibrate. Now as it stands, Matt Ryan is by far head and shoulders the best quarterback of the division.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, man. Let's go. Excited for this offseason, excited for Sky More Chat. We'll let's loop back up in like 2 or 3 weeks when you've ran your models for everybody.
Yeah, I've been waiting until this next week of hopefully to come up for air, you know, after the 2021 content. Like you, this is my last piece of 2021 content joining you, and I always look forward to us doing the show. We didn't know we were going to do it this year. We just didn't know if it would fit in, and it's more of a reason. I don't know if the listeners, you know, care as much, but I just like to get on it and shoot the shit with you, man.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think people enjoy this show. I love doing it. We're going to keep it on the schedule as long as the powers that be, keep making it happen. And yeah, we'll pick games. You know, I hope that, I hope Wandale Robinson gets drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs or Dallas Cowboys, and we'll have a, Wandale is going to be my new Visca, I think, or my new Hardman, where I'm like, dude, I already have done a couple drafts for next year, and I've taken Hardman and everyone, because he's like, he flashed at the end, you know? Like, Hardman having 100 yards in a playoff game was, like, literally the worst thing that could ever happen to me. Like, how bad was that for me? So brutal, dude. Yeah.
It was good. Funny, too, because I think on the play, when the Chiefs had to ultimately kick that field goal and they were inside like the 10-yard line, like they, everyone was doing like the let them score Twitter was out, and it was like, no way, how can you let them score? But on the, like Hardman was legitimately open like on the second down play.
Yeah,
it was like, yeah, Mahomes didn't get to him, but
Kelsey was open too. It'll completely get lost to history, but on that awful sack that Mahomes took where he also fumbled, he had Kelsey immediately. If he had been, you know, feel like, I think,
read, yeah,
well, if he'd been feeling himself, right, like I think his confidence was just kind of fucked by that point in the game, but I think if he was like, you know, feeling it, I think he would have just hit Kelsey and scored and the game would have been over, which is, you know, it is one of those things. What can you
but
do?
Yeah, prospect season is here, man, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, there we go. All right, everyone, Lord Reeves, Sharp Football Analysis, and we'll be back here in a couple weeks.